Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to The Aftermath. Today, we'll be talking to Dr. Camilla Townsend. She is a distinguished professor of history specializing in early Native American and Latin American history at Rutgers University, and she has a fascinating take on the fall of the Aztec Empire. Hi, Dr. Townsend. It's so great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here.
Can you talk to us about the Mexica's rise to power?
Sure. About 100 years before the Spaniards ever got to Mexico, the Mexica came down from the north, actually from today's Arizona and New Mexico, and they kind of hired themselves out as mercenaries, fought this group and that group on behalf of others, and eventually settled on a little tiny island in the very center of Mexico. It was a swampy area. No one else wanted it. So they set up their little town there, and over the course of 3 to 4 generations, they managed to conquer so much territory, so many other tribes, that they were really running Mexico by the time the Spaniards got there.
And can you set the stage for us? So it's 1519. What is life like for the people of Tenochtitlan?
When Cortez got there, or when the Spaniards arrived in 1519, the island city of Tenochtitlan was truly impressive. There were tens of thousands of people on that island, and if you count the population living around the island, sort of if you thought of the greater New York City area as an equivalent as opposed to just the island of Manhattan, there may have been as many as 250,000 people. Moctezuma, the high chief, or the emperor, as we sometimes call him, had zoological gardens. He had libraries of, scroll books that were painted glyphs. There were very orderly streets that were kept clean by street cleaners. Running water was brought in from the surrounding area in, via aqueducts. People, including Europeans, when they got there, who wandered the streets, said it was enormously beautiful. Gardens everywhere, songbirds everywhere.
After the arrival of the Spanish, and when it comes to Moctezuma, we don't really buy that such a powerful emperor with, libraries and a 250,000 people living in his city, he just kind of surrendered to Cortez and his men. What do we know about him, and what's your take on Cortez and his first meeting?
So Moctezuma had been high chief for 17 years when the Spaniards got there. He was by then a middle-aged man, considered very savvy. and a very effective emperor or head of state. There is no evidence from that time period that he just gave up his kingdom and said, here, take it, it's yours, mi casa es su casa, nor any evidence that they thought the white men were gods. You know, these things were myths that were developed in the late 1500s by Spaniards. At the time, Moctezuma was not certain whether he should fight or not, but he tended to think not. He asked certain subsidiary states, client states, to attack the Spaniards as they made their way up from the coast, and that did happen. And he learned from reports on those battles that the Europeans were a force to be reckoned with. Remember that they were mounted on horses. They were all wearing metal armor, which shattered stone or flint arrows. So they really were not a force that could be easily beaten. Probably if all of the Central Mexicans had banded together to fight at one time, they could have won a battle, but there would have been thousands dead for every one that died on the Spanish side because of their armor, their horses, their crossbows. So Moctezuma knew this, and when he went out to meet the Spaniards as they were arriving, we assume at this point, the scholars assume, that what he really wanted was information. He was going to make these newcomers welcome in his city and get to know them and find out what they really wanted. Would some sort of tribute perhaps keep them away in future if he was willing to pay it? That sort of thing. But there is no evidence that he actually was overwhelmed by the Spaniards or looked on them with awe or thought they were gods. He just wished that his people had metal armor like they did.
Yes, it feels like a very strategic move on his part to send other groups to fight them and to retain that information, to gather that intel.
Absolutely. He also tried to play the various puzzle pieces at hand to his advantage. Of course, the Spaniards had an excellent translator, a young woman who had been put into slavery by the Aztecs. So she hated the Aztecs. And so the Spaniards knew a great deal about the local situation. And they knew, for example, that there were several client states, subsidiary states, who really hated the Aztec overlords. And so they played that card. They tried to convince other people to side with them and against the Aztecs. Not everybody did. There's kind of a modern day myth that all the people of Mexico were just waiting for someone else to come and someone they could rally around and, you know, turn against the hated Aztecs. It wasn't quite that simple. The Aztecs had a lot of friends and allies. A lot of people wanted to be them. A lot of people were allied to them through marriage, etc. So it was a complicated playing board in which different city states, different ethnic states had to decide who they were going to ally with. And some chose the Aztecs, some chose the Spaniards. It was a complicated game.
So can we talk about this translator, Malintzin? I think that's how you say her name.
You got it. Right. Her name in Nahuatl, in their language, was Malintzin. She was from the Veracruz area. It was called Coatzacoalcos in those days. And her people were threatened by the Aztecs. Her people were eventually attacked, and she was given into slavery and sold by Aztec merchants to the Mayas. She was living as a slave among the Mayas when they lost a battle with Cortez and then gave her and 19 other girls as a peace offering, as slaves. The slaves were to be the peace offering to the Spaniards. Eventually, Cortez realized that she not only spoke Mayan, but also Nahuatl, the Aztec language. She had learned that as a child because it was spoken in her area. So she was invaluable. There's a sort of a myth or a prejudice that exists out there that she was somehow selling her own people out, but she wasn't. Of course, if anything, she hoped to see the Aztecs destroyed because they had attacked her people, who lived, as I said, in the Veracruz area. So she was a slave who had found freedom in this war, and the newcomers, in her eyes, were good people, because the Aztecs were the enemy.
Right. For years, I feel like she's been used as a scapegoat. We're trying to right some wrongs here along the way.
That's right. She has been treated unfairly. And it's kind of a weight on the shoulders of a lot of indigenous women in Mexico to this day that somehow their ancestor is responsible for all this. But it's not true.
It's really not fair. So what was the atmosphere in the city of Tenochtitlan those first few months between the Aztecs and the Spanish before Cortez goes off to the shore to, deal with Velasquez's people? What is the tension like, you know, when supposedly Moctezuma is taken prisoner?
Well, at first, the relations between the Spaniards and the essentially the visiting Europeans are pretty good. The Europeans toured the city. They were impressed. The Nahuas, the Mexica, were trying to get more information. But little by little, tensions did arise. The Spaniards wanted sex from local women, and they didn't necessarily want to give it. The Spaniards needed a lot of food and fresh water, and they didn't want to pay as much for it as the city folk wanted. So little by little, more people got angry. Montezuma kept trying to calm his people down, saying, look, I have these battle reports. It's not going to go well if we fight them. Let's just treat them well, gain information, and eventually they will leave. But as you just alluded to, but eventually Cortez got a message that more Spaniards had arrived at the coast, and he went to meet them. While he was gone, relations between the Spaniards and the indigenous people in the city soured dramatically. There was a horrible, really have to say, massacre at a dance festival that the indigenous people were holding. The Spaniard who had been left in charge, Pedro de Alvarado, decided that it was really a war dance, or at least he said that that's what he feared. And he had all the participants, hundreds of young warriors, slaughtered. This caused, as you can imagine, immense uproar in the city. And people began to say, we got to ignore Montezuma. He says we, you know, shouldn't fight these people, but we've got to fight them. So when Cortez and the other Spaniards made their way back to the city, they surrounded them in their palace compound, and they sent messengers saying, look, we know that more of us will die than of you at first, but eventually we will overwhelm you. So get ready. We're going to destroy you. And at that point, in desperation, Cortez and the Spaniards break out at night, get to the causeways, because you might remember this is an island city, and lots of them drown as they're trying to cross these causeways, because people back then, most of them weren't that good at swimming. Meanwhile, the Indians hear that they're leaving, and they come and they begin to shoot at them. And some of the arrows find their way. They're in canoes, these warriors, and they find their ways up into the sort of the armpits and in the chin area from below, in other words. And so they're able to kill some of the Spaniards that way. All told, about a quarter of the Spaniards died that night. The Spanish still refer to that night as La Noche Triste, the sad night. But about three quarters of them did escape together with a bunch of their indigenous allies, and they made their way out to another town called Tlaxcala, where they in effect made a peace treaty with these outsiders and promised to go back together to try to bring the Aztecs down.
So when Cortez returns, what kind of resistance is he greeted with?
After the Spaniards left and they busted out on that Noche Triste, the smallpox exploded, the epidemic exploded in the city. And for about 3 months, much of Tenochtitlan was immobilized, either sick or caring for the sick. It had about a 20% death rate, so it leaves COVID-19 in the dust. Wow. The Spaniards did not come back and attack then, even though many of them did have immunity, because smallpox is a disease that you only get once. You know, once you've had it, you're immune. So by the time you're middle age, if you live that long, you're pretty much immune to smallpox. They didn't come back, though, because their indigenous allies were also dying in droves. We tend to forget that when we blame the disease. It wasn't entirely the disease's fault. The disease did undermine Aztec efforts, but it actually, you know, devastated all indigenous communities, including the people who were siding with the Spaniards. So in effect, the war just stopped for a few months. And then the epidemic moved on, as we are seeing now. It moves to new territory. So eventually it moved both south and a little bit north. And then the war picked up again. By that time, more Europeans had come with more horses, more armor, more crossbows. By the time Cortez returned, his allies had either died or recuperated from the smallpox, and he had dozens more horses, hundreds more men, and lots more cannons, ammunition, crossbows, etc.
Oh, I see. So in your opinion, do you think that the Aztecs could have held their ground against the Spanish if they hadn't been hit with the smallpox?
Yes and no. It would have bought them some time. That is, the smallpox hastened their demise for about 3 months. You know, they were sick or recovering. They weren't fighting. Again, though, that was also true of the enemy, not so much the Spaniards as their indigenous allies. So it would have been more possible for them to keep fighting, to keep up the good fight, so to speak, for longer if they hadn't been hit by the smallpox. But they were going to lose, ultimately, even if the disease had not been present. There was at least a 5,000, maybe a 10,000-year technology gap between the two sides. The Aztecs had only been sedentary farmers they had only been there for 100 years, but the people of the Central Valley of Mexico had only been sedentary farmers for a couple thousand years, whereas the people in the Old World, as you know, had been farming since ancient Mesopotamia, right, since the days of the Fertile Crescent. They had had 10,000 years to develop blacksmithy shops, compasses, ships, printing presses, all the things that come with sedentary life. Whereas the Aztecs had not had that much time. So it was almost as if they were at the technological phase of, say, the ancient Sumerians. If you remember that from grade school, it would be as if the ancient Sumerians had come face to face with Renaissance Europe. The ancient Sumerians were impressive as hell. You can think of the ziggurats and, you know, all we know about the Fertile Crescent. But they couldn't have taken down the Holy Roman Empire and Charles V of Spain and throw in the Tudors of England, too. That just wasn't happening, right? You know? So it's as if, again, it's as if a society that was as impressive as ancient Mesopotamia came face to face with Renaissance Europe. They fought. The Aztecs, after the passing of the smallpox epidemic, they fought tooth and nail. It took 3 months of hard hand-to-hand fighting in an inner-city area, an urban warfare, guerrilla warfare, for the Spaniards to bring them down, but they did bring them down. Now, the Spaniards also had many allies, but the reason they had those allies, in effect, was because they had this extraordinary technology. They were able to build ships in that central lake very quickly, and those ships could then just, when the wind was right, bear down on that island city in half an hour. This sort of thing had just never happened before because they hadn't had sailing. They'd had canoes, but not sailing technology in that part of the world. Or if 100 men attacked on horseback, maybe one would be injured, but they would trample on and skewer and torch hundreds or even thousands of other people. When the Spaniards shot their little cannons from the shipboards that they had, you know, the ships that they had built in that lake, they could destroy a whole neighborhood by sending flaming arrows into it. They could destroy a whole neighborhood in a morning. So it just wasn't a fair fight. The Aztecs gave as good as they could, and they learned how to use some of the equipment. At one point, they captured a catapult, for example, and they thought, we'll learn how to use it. But it was, you know, harder to do than first seemed, and they decided eventually to just sink it in the lake.
So what would you say then, ultimately, is to blame for the fall of the Aztec Empire?
Well, this may surprise you, but I actually think it's the fault of some plant seeds.
Wow!
I mean that. In ancient Iran and Iraq, in the Fertile Crescent, they happened to have a constellation of incredible plant seeds. Ancient wheat and ancient peas taken together are basically the single best set of ancient crops that existed anywhere in the world. The people there became farmers. They gradually gave up hunting and gathering. In other parts of the world, the seeds just couldn't match it. They paled in comparison. So, for example, you have corn in Mesoamerica. It's not a complete protein. After millennia of trying to grow it bigger and bigger and getting those kernels larger and larger, think of like the Chinese corn and Chinese food, how that had to grow into a big ear of corn. And then they also had to figure out that you had to eat it in the same day as you ate beans. If you eat corn and beans together, it's a complete protein. It's like a hamburger. But it took about 5 millennia longer to get there than it did to just start to plant ancient wheat. Ancient wheat was as good then as it is now. So the people of ancient Iran and Iraq and the Old World became farmers about, you know, between 5,000 and 10,000 years before the people of Mexico became full-time farmers, or really before the people of sub-Saharan Africa or elsewhere in Latin America or North America. So it gave the Europeans and the Chinese a huge advantage when they expanded outward from the old world, because they had all this technology that they had had thousands of years to develop. Hunters and gatherers can't really develop that much technology, just what they need for hunting and gathering. They don't have time. They're on the move all the time. They can't build blacksmith shops or something like that because they got to keep moving. It has nothing to do with intelligence. They're not at all any less intelligent. But it does mean that there's going to be a big differential when the two sides meet. So I wouldn't say the Spaniards should get off completely. They were not nice guys. And I wouldn't say Montezuma should get off completely. He could have made a few decisions a little differently, and then the war would have lasted longer. But ultimately, it was really the fault of the plant seeds.
I think what you're getting at here is nutrition, really, and the ability to, once we are fed, the ability we are to then grow as a society. And, you know, we still see that happening today, so it's fascinating.
Right. To be fed also in such a way that you don't need to keep moving around, to be able to, you know, start a city or town and just stay there. It allows room for all sorts of developments, you know, alphabet, weapons, compasses, all sorts of things that you just can't do when you're chasing the deer or the rabbits or grabbing some cranberries and moving on, you know.
If only they had trail mix. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Townsend. It's been wonderful talking to you, and it's given us a lot of clarity.
It's been a pleasure.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow, I'm so glad that we got to talk to Dr. Townsend. I mean, she really threw in a curveball there in the last second. I mean, the whole time, I think. And just to remind everyone, we ended up sending smallpox to jail, and we gave Spanish machismo the big slap. Now, how do we feel about our decisions, and how do we feel about Dr. Townsend's revelatory conversation?
Oh, I don't know if you guys have been checking the alarmist gel message boards, but the smallpox is spreading and spreading fast. And these guys and gals who we have sent into the alarmist jail are not feeling well.
We're going to feel like real assholes if we made a mistake, but it's too late.
It's too, Amanda, I'm telling you, it is too late.
Oh, no.
It's what have we done? Wait, Rebecca, is that making you rethink the verdict? Because it kind of got to me.
Yeah, it honestly, it really is making me rethink the verdict. I have to admit. And I just want to say, and we're not going to talk about this for long, but I was kind of redeemed regarding the fashion industry a tiny bit.
How? No.
And we don't have to talk about this.
No, how? Right. What did she say?
She did mention the armor. She mentioned how how the stones and everything they were throwing at the Spanish was pulverizing or breaking apart once it hit their armor.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
She did say those Aztecs wish they had that armor.
But, you know, credit to the Spanish for slimming down to be able to fit into that armor, you know?
Are you calling the Aztecs fat, Chris?
No, I'm saying they slimmed down. I mean, to get into those fashionable threads,
yeah,
they had to really watch their weight.
I guess. There's no comparison, Chris.
No, I'm not calling the Aztecs fat. Look, the fashion, and the way that the armor was designed, it was part of, and this is what she said at the end, the thousands of years of technological development that Europe, like, and the way she put that, the way she framed the, what's it called? The crescent?
Fertile crescent.
The fertile crescent, yeah. Is basically like a petri dish, or like a, humanity got to sort of develop for so long in that area that any sort of civilizations that stemmed from it had a huge advantage.
Right. It felt like, first of all, modern warfare was massive.
Yeah.
To the losing, the Aztecs losing that war, and time, just the ability to grow as a civilization and set roots and have the time to, rise in technology figure it out. It's almost like they didn't have enough time to figure it out. It really makes me think about immigration.
That is interesting.
And all of these, just how that works and how that really affects a group.
Well,
in the growth and economic growth, not just economically, but, you know, being the first people in a family to be able to go to college, and that kind of stuff takes time.
And with immigration, you're talking about like a tiny, tiny percentage of the disparity we're talking about with the Aztecs and the Spanish, because when she said there was a 5,000 to 10,000 year technological disparity, that's almost incomprehensible to me. Like, I didn't realize, I think we just didn't put enough emphasis on how important this was in the Spanish's advantage. Because when you say it like that, when you're putting 100 Spaniards against thousands and thousands of Aztecs, like, the Spaniards really did still have an advantage.
Yeah. I like what she said. It had nothing to do with how smart they were. It really just was a matter of time.
It was a matter of time. Yeah, and the way she explained how they were able to, they had the wherewithal to build those boats. You can imagine those Tenochtitlan, the city, all those waterways were just used for canoes. And here comes this massive ship, and I'm sure the Aztecs were just shocked by that. And well, the Spanish knew how to build those things. They had the technology. They had the experience. And it just gave them, they had advantages every which way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a shipbuilder with them. And he was able to just, it wasn't even that it was a massive ship. It was the perfect ship. Because they were actually like sailboats. What they built were sailboats, but they were perfectly made so that they could put the cannons and the artillery, but still go through the causeways and the canals. It was just like,
oh, I see,
ingenuity or something, like technological ingenuity. It is really fascinating. I mean,
it's like you're a 6 year old and a bully comes up to you, but the bully isn't another 6 year old. It's a 35 year old bully.
35 year old in their prime.
In their prime, exactly.
With a car and money.
And like who has taken like boxing classes on the weekends. Like like boxing and jujitsu, like they know how to fight too.
It's basically like me going 10,000 years into the past. And then being, right. I mean, I don't know. It's just, that's really what it is. It's like a time machine.
Yes, you're so right, Amanda. It's a time machine.
It's a time machine.
These people from the future went to the past and just took advantage.
Yeah.
You know, it's also, you can kind of blame plate tectonics, because we had a whole ocean.
I mean, I did bring that up.
There's a whole ocean.
I think I cut that part. Sorry.
But if more of civilization had developed out of the Fertile Crescent, then we'd all be starting sort of on equal footing. So there wouldn't have been this. Anyway, we're sort of getting into, I mean, you could also blame amoebas.
You know, we all laughed when I brought up plate tectonics, and Amanda actually erased it from the original recording.
Well, I thought you were so out there. I was like, I'm saving her from herself. But looking back, I was totally wrong, because you were onto something.
I started it by saying we should talk about the dinosaurs, and maybe that's what threw her off.
I said, here she goes again. You guys don't know this, but I cut out a whole dinosaur rant from every episode. I should start cutting you wanting to blame the fashion industry.
No.
I don't know. The fans kind of like that stuff, I think.
I think so. I do. So, Rebecca, tell us, do you think like this warrants a retrial, or where is your head at?
I think this definitely warrants a retrial, and I think that we can actually come up with it, you know, right now. I think she's correct in the sense that smallpox isn't, while it really hampered the fight, in the end, they were able to keep fighting. And it's hard to say, but what she said, you know, I wanted to know, like, if they hadn't gotten smallpox, would they still have had a shot? And her response was no. Mm. Maybe they would have fought for a little longer, but ultimately the technology would have caught up to them. And I think, you know, I'm not sure what the exact phrasing is. Maybe you guys can help me, but I think it's like, it's something to do with the time machine, and it, maybe it's literally matter of time that needs to go into the alarmist jail.
Or, I mean, okay, so what she said was good seeds.
Right. So then who would be to blame would be bad seeds, right? Aztec, the bad seeds, the bad seeds in the Americas.
Lack of good seeds. Because what she was saying is that the seed has to grow into what it is right now. So like they have to mix seeds and like allow them to change. It's like the changing of food.
I think, like, I have an idea. I have a pitch.
Okay.
We send corn.
Corn.
Because she was shit talking corn, and she said, you know, if corn had been more nutritious, it could have been a game changer. And they had a lot of corn.
They kept looking for better corn, right? So they had to keep moving. So had they just found good corn wherever they were, she said it was New Mexico and Arizona in that area.
And also, then, corn isn't, she said, corn's not a complete protein, not like the good wheat that they had
right.
in the Fertile Crescent.
Right.
I think it was beans. That it was like beans.
If you
and
mix corn and beans.
Mix, yeah, she said if you mix corn and beans, you're all set.
You get it. Uh-huh. And they didn't know that.
So maybe it was bad cooks. Maybe it was
just bad cooks.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Or I mean, I think we could put technological. If you want to go more broad, I think we could do technological disparity.
Yeah.
But I think also we could use a figurehead. It could be corn or no good seeds as a figurehead for technological disparity. So,
yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm going to go with Professor Townsend and send those seeds to the alarmist jail because they didn't help. They didn't help them.
I got to.
What do you think?
I mean, I am not going to, we're not going to like the looks on the faces of the people in the alarmist jail when we say, oops, sorry, guys. We're going to take out the smallpox that we put in here with you guys, and we're going to give you this little pile of seeds. Do you know how pissed the British government is going to be? Do you know how pissed man's hubris is going to be when we do that? I'm not going to be there when we make
that's
that exchange.
That's a bad mistake because the seeds would have been awesome. They could have. Wait, so are we sending good seeds or no good seeds or bad seeds?
Yeah, the bad seeds we're sending.
I mean, you're sort of like, I don't know how to parse through this, but if it wasn't for the good seeds, the Spanish probably wouldn't have had the technology to even take boats across the sea, right?
Okay. So, and also, I think good seeds will be a little bit of a reparation to the smallpox-riddled jail people because they can plant a garden.
Sure.
If we send them bad seeds, it's kind of like insult to injury.
That is I would say that is a very, very small consolation.
Another thing we could do is send guns to jail. That might feel more satisfying.
Well, guns and good seeds, just to sort of throw this out there. It's like they have contributed to like this, where we're talking about is good technological development that has contributed to the lives we lead now, to the advancement of medicine, to all the comforts of our daily lives, to technology, to us being able to do a podcast and sort of make a living. podcasting. So I wouldn't say good technology is to blame. I would say, if anything, the fall of the Aztec Empire, unfortunately, was the bad seeds because that is what sort of took them so long to build
right.
Tenochtitlan. Like the city probably could have been built thousands of years ago and they could have developed out technology quicker if the Americas had better seeds.
Okay, so here's what I think we should do. I think I'm going to need to go to jail and I'm going to need to make a formal apology to all of those. As the leader of the alarmists, I'm going to have to apologize.
And really mean it. Like,
and
you
yes,
can't laugh.
It's going to be a really good speech. Yeah. Don't worry. And we're going to let smallpox out. Sorry, world. Sorry, world. And we're going to put a handful of bad seeds and some cannons and war weapons.
Oh.
Weapons okay. of war.
Not horses, because she said even if they didn't have weapons, even though they just had horses and boats, they maybe still would have won. You think so?
Yes. Weapons, a horse... No boats because the Aztecs still could have figured out a boat situation.
Okay. We'll give them one horse, a sack of bad seeds, no boats, and one piece of body armor?
No, we're going to put just a stack of weapons.
How about a cannon? A cannon because the Aztecs put that cannon in the water. We'll get that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A wet cannon.
Okay, there was a cannon.
Yeah, now we're gonna have to. We're gonna have to keep this these things that we put in the prison in our jail in solitary confinement because we can't let the other prisoners get a hold of these weapons.
Oh, geez. I mean, yeah, it's true.
So,
and do you want to? And you're keeping machismo as the big slop. We're happy with that.
I feel pretty good about that. You know, it really was. The Spanish could have been like, I'm sorry, let's let them be. you know, why do we need all this gold? You know,
they could have just respected that it's not really a fair fight because they really were, you know, taking advantage of the situation. So,
yeah. So I feel good about the slap. All right. It's settled. Bad seeds, a wet cannon, a horse, and a stack of weapons of war. You're going to the alarmist jail. See you, smallpox. Bon voyage.
I think I like the practice of having to distill it down to a few specific items, like physical items that we put in the jail, as opposed to like sort of more broad concepts. I mean,
well, that's why, just to mix that's it why in I eventually. Really wanted a big giant corn on the cob with little arms in the jail and like a little face in a little prison uniform. Can you just imagine that?
And you know what else I think we should put in an alarmist jail? It's not really anything, but it's maybe in your apology, just make a solemn promise to really, really think about it before you put another disease in the jail.
That's good.
Put a lot, you'll really put a lot of thought into it next time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's our job is never easy, and this one was a difficult one, but sometimes you got to do what you have to do.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to call that expert.
The expert, and you got to change your mind. It's okay to change your mind, people.
I'm actually glad that we do the guest expert episodes after we record, because it's like we would get it right too much if we talked to the guest experts beforehand.
Yeah,
we would always be right.
We already get it right too much, you know, and we would even get it right even more, which is like too right.
Well, it was a really good time talking to Dr. Townsend. And before we go, I got this message on our Instagram from a listener called Thomas, and they brought up something really interesting. He said, I love the concept of the big clap, and I get that it rhymes with the big slap, but am I the only one who thinks it sounds like an STD?
No, that's crossed my mind.
I must admit, it hadn't crossed my mind, but I think I'm going to still keep it. Yeah, because with every clap, you know, don't let it get to your head. You'll get an STD, you know? It's a good reminder.
Also, can we shout out our Facebook page? We have the Alarmy Facebook page if you want to join the conversation with other members of the Alarmy.
Yeah, it's a private page set up by one of our listeners, Debbie, and you can go on there and talk in private.
And you can get yourself the big clap.
The big clap.
And also follow us on Instagram. We're at the Alarmist Podcast. On Twitter, we're at Alarmist The. And you can send us an email at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. It keeps the mics on over here. And tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the 2008 financial crisis.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.